Good afternoon. Welcome back to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio, Inc., a league of nations among other internet radio talk stations, voices of the people, united we roar. Today is July 13th. Hope you're not superstitious. PIVTR is the internet home for anyone seeking quality information and entertainment, as well as answers to many of the multiple concerns that the average person wants to know. At PIVTR, we not only provide experts passionate about their work, we offer you viable content and solutions. PIVTR is also dedicated to helping published mid-list and beginning writers, unknown authors, small businesses, and entrepreneurs to further market themselves, their services, books, and products to the media. And now, from 2:30 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, let me present to you Dr. Barbara Becker, Holstein, and Happiness for Women Only. Good afternoon, Barbara. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Lillian. Thank you so much. And I'm delighted to be back on my show, Happiness for Women Only. And I'm going to tell you a little secret. Today's show, we're expanding. It's not just happiness for women only. It's happiness. And we're going to include men and boys and wherever the conversation takes us. We've gone for 4 or 5 weeks talking about women at different ages of development and some of their core happiness issues, as well as how to discover and bring in more happiness into your lives as women. And I think that we need a refreshing breather today. We're Martha Trowbridge, inspirational writer for Women in Crisis, and myself, Dr. Barbara Becker Holstein. We have the pleasure of having with us a guest. His name is Dr. Abraham J. Twersky, and he's a very, very well-known, in fact, an internationally known Hasidic rabbi who lives in this country, who is also a psychiatrist. His professional specialty has been substance abuse, and he founded the Gateway Rehabilitation Center in Pittsburgh. And he has written so many books that I only printed out, Rabbi, about 30 from Amazon, and I thought I'd let you decide which ones you want to mention, and certainly maybe your new book, Happiness, Designed from a Spiritual Perspective, which will come out from Jewish Lights. Hello, Rabbi.
Hi.
It's wonderful. Yes, please. It's wonderful to have you with us, and I wonder, would you like to tell us a little bit about your new book, maybe why you've written it, and how you're framing happiness from a spiritual perspective?
Well, as you mentioned, my primary occupation for many years has been with problems of alcoholism and drug addiction. And I realized that the backbone of recovery is spirituality. Now, spirituality is a term that is quite frequently used, but often confused. Sometimes people think that spirituality is religion. Others think that spirituality is an appreciation of the universe. Many kinds of things have been talked about spirituality. What my work led me to do is to come up with a workable definition of spirituality that I think everyone can accept, and once it's understood, can be put to use. So the way it works is this. The recognition that the human being is a body, of course, but that our body is essentially an animal-type body. Now, science tells us that we are classified as Homo sapiens. And in English, that means a gorilla with some intellect. Now, I think that intelligence is important, but there are more things than intelligence that are unique to a human being. So that we are, yes, we are a physical body, but a something else. Now, that something else consists of all the kinds of things that animals do not have. For example, animals do not think about a goal and purpose in their lives. Animals do not make a voluntary volitional effort to improve themselves and to become better than they are. I mean, they grow, whatever, but they can't do a volitional effort to make themselves better than what they are. Animals cannot think about the future consequences of their actions. Very importantly, an animal cannot defy a bodily drive because of ethical considerations. And again, very importantly, animals are essentially motivated by self-gratification. Yes, a mother bear will care for its cubs. That's biological. But there is no animal that will conduct a United Way drive, you know, and give of itself, of its comfort, of its belongings to a total stranger. That is a unique human feature. Now, there are others, but I just take all of those that I can put my finger on, the unique human features, and put them all together. And I say, these are the human spirit. So it's not necessarily a religious concept, but I say that the spirit is the sum total of all of the factors that separate a human being from an animal. And if one exercises all of those things, then one becomes spiritual.
It's a good definition because we don't get lost in endless arguments for those people who are not certain what happens after death, etc.
Right. It doesn't concern any of that. It just concerns the very simple fact that we are a body plus something else, and this something else is what I've called the spirit. Now, I think that the punchline here is that we know that the body, if it lacks certain essential nutrients, gets sick. You can have an iron deficiency, you can have a vitamin C deficiency, and if the body is deficient in what it needs, it becomes ill. I believe that the spirit, as we defined it, also has nutrients, and that if you don't give the spirit its nutrients, it too becomes ill. And that the symptom of what I call spirituality deficiency syndrome is a pervasive discontent and unhappiness with life that will not get better with treatment of antidepressants or even psychotherapy. One must supply the spirit with its nutrients, which means to do all of the kinds of things that the spirit is capable of doing. The problem is that people who fail to exercise the spirit as I've defined it, and they develop this feeling of unhappiness, don't know why they feel that way. Nobody tells them why they feel that way. And so they try to find things that will relieve them of this unpleasant unhappiness. One person will find alcohol will do it, another will find drugs, another will find food, another will find sex, another will find gambling. What happens is that people look for things to take away the feeling of discontent, and none of these can work over the long period of time. And that's how I got into it from the addiction thing. The addict is looking for ways to get rid of painful feelings, tries the drugs, tries alcohol, it works for an hour, whatever, and then it wears off and he's got to go for more. Now, maybe most of us are not alcoholics or drug addicts, but many of us have kinds of behaviors that are not too different. For example, if a person thinks that making a lot of money is going to make him happy, he can become addicted to making money. A person can become addicted to being at the office. Various kinds of things that people look for escapes from their feeling of unhappiness because nobody has helped them realize that their unhappiness is due to what I call SDS, spirituality deficiency syndrome.
Very, very interesting. Can you tell us what some of the steps are that someone has to start to do to make themselves less deficient in the spiritual fulfillment that we're entitled to?
Okay. I think that, first of all, like anything else, the first thing that a person has to do is to realize that he's got this particular deficiency, that he has to go for it. Because so often, you know, we are experts at blaming instead of looking for the causes within ourselves. So I think, for example, that people will blame They'll blame the community, they'll blame the family, they'll blame this, they'll blame this, but they won't look for the real cause. Now, I think that there have been a number of divorces of people in their middle age who lived together for 25 years, and because of this chronic unhappiness, the husband decides or the wife decides, I'm married to the wrong person. And so they blame the other person instead of looking for the real cause, which is the spirituality deficiency. So first one has to do is that one has to identify that the problem is a spirituality deficiency. Then I set up, you try to simplify things, although it doesn't always work that way. Try to set up a simple scale of steps, probably 10 steps, that one can work on in order to overcome the deficiency syndrome. Let me just go through some of them as best as I remember them. I don't have the book right before me now. Okay. Step one, I'm aware that I have some shortcomings, and I want to become a better person. And that's the step that I mentioned that we first have to realize. Okay. Secondly, I realize that I can be in charge of my behavior. You know, we're living in a time when people attribute their behavior to everything else as though they're not at fault. And so if somebody commits some crime, it's somehow the community's fault, right? So I am in charge of my behavior.
May I interject for 1 minute in reference to women? And Martha, are you still on the phone?
I am.
Okay. Very often for women in a one-down marriage, if that's the case, where the husband may be somewhat dominant and not truly fit for the dominance role, the woman ends up feeling that she's incapable and gives away a lot of her power and so really is floating in terms of power by the time she realizes how distressed she is. That, I don't know if that happens to men too, but that's
sure.
One of the issues that I work with a lot with women.
Sure. Right. No question. Step three, I realize that changing my character traits is a slow process, but I'm willing to persist. I'm going to identify and work on my character defects one by one to become more human and less animal. I'm going to look for ways to overcome my negative character traits. I'm going to cultivate healthy, enjoyable experiences. I'm going to give serious consideration to the relative importance of things. Sometimes we prioritize so ridiculously. Animals can't prioritize. Human beings can prioritize. And you know, we have to see where things are important. Can I give you just a simple example of that, a very tragic example? Many years ago, I received a call from a university not too far from Pittsburgh, from a police sergeant at that town, that a university student had been picked up streaking, and they put him in jail. He'd been using drugs. The sergeant says, look, I know this kid is not a criminal. He needs help. Can we send him to you? I said, of course. He said, okay, well, I have to wait for the father to come and pick him up. Well, the father was the chairman of the board of a very important, one of the Fortune 500 companies. The father was conducting a stockholders meeting in New York and could not come to get the kid out of jail for 3 days. Right? Finally, the kid came in, and he didn't do all that well. Then he left the house still functioned, and later, about 6 years later, unfortunately, I got word that the youngster had committed suicide.
Mm.
I don't blame the father for this, but where were the father's priorities? You know, another person would have said, let the vice chairman or the vice president or whoever it is take over the meeting. My kid's in trouble. I got to go. So I think that's just an extreme example, but in lesser ways, you know, we have to learn how to prioritize.
And I think often for a woman, it's prioritizing some space for her own health and even enough sleep. You know, she's often the last person in bed, the first one up, exhausted and drained. So their basic concepts are, these are very important concepts that I guess you have to turn the concept to fit the character that you're dealing with.
Well, of course, everything has to individualize.
Right, of course.
And the next step, I think, is also important. I will avoid things that are inimical to spirituality. And by that, I'm talking about the kind of unfortunate things that our kids are exposed to, violence, immorality, stuff on TV and Internet that never existed when I was a kid. Now, I remember when President Truman used the word hell in a speech, and there was a national outrage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where have we come from that? You look at the news today, there's just immorality all over in the highest offices in the land.
Well, Dr. Prisky, excuse me, it's Martha. I'm thinking of adding to that list, if I were a parent, which I am not. I have many animals. I'm getting a kick out of your discussion of animals. But I would add to that list not exposing children to the news. It's dreadful. It glamorizes violence
100%.
And bad behavior.
Right. You know, see, there's so much that goes on that our influence of our economic and commercial society. There's an author, Matthew Kelly, and he said he was once sitting in a lecture where the professor said, marketing is about creating needs in consumers. It's about creating a desire in people that in turn makes them feel that they need your product or service. It's about making people feel they need things even if they don't. Now, that's pushing our economy. Now, that is not a spiritual concept. And so we're caught up in the fact that we have to overcome some of the pressures of our economy. And I think this puts an enormous stress and an enormous responsibility on parents to live a kind of life that will make their children want to be spiritual, because it's not going to happen by lecture. Another thing I think is important to spirituality, develop a sense of humor. Learn how to laugh.
Why is that so important? What is it about humor?
I think that humor is the kind of discharge that it's a healthy kind of discharge. You know, life is awfully serious, and there's so many difficult things in life. And if we don't find something to laugh about,
we might cry.
Right.
Well, and also to learn to laugh at yourself, at your own foibles, is tremendous.
Sure. You know, I think, it's been pretty well established, even in terms of people who have malignant disease, that if they get a belly laugh every day, they can prolong their life. I had a situation with a friend of mine who was suffering from cancer, and I made up with him, I will fax you a joke every day, you fax me back a joke every day. And if we've heard of the joke, we've got to send another one. And it's the kind of thing that laughter is the best medicine. And I was once sitting across the table from a psychiatrist at a convention, and what this doctor was doing is he had his fingers up by the corners of his mouth, and he was elevating the corners of his mouth like manufacturing a smile. And he noticed that I was looking at him, and he said, oh, this isn't an obsession. He says, I think that some movements of the facial muscles can help relieve the kind of mood that you're in. So even if you don't feel like smiling, if you manufacture a smile, you can feel better.
Have you heard about the yoga happiness groups around the world? Because that's exactly what they're doing. They start off a very easy level yoga, but first by forcing laughter till they're all laughing.
That's right. That's right. Another step is don't let setbacks discourage you.
And
I point out something that happened to me that was a lesson. It was a very cold day. It was a sub-zero, and my car wouldn't start. So I walked to the post office, when I was about halfway there, in spite of the fact that I was careful, I slipped on a piece of ice and got bruised. Now, if somebody told me, uh-oh, you slipped, that means you're back home. I said, no, I'm not back home. I'm halfway there. The fact mm-hmm. that I slipped does not undo my progress. So I think that when we make progress in anything and then we find that we have a little setback, that does not mean that we're back at square one. Nobody can take away from us the progress that we've made. So don't let setbacks discourage you. And then finally, step 10, realize that there is never an end to spiritual growth. We can grow physically, yeah, we grow until about age 18, 19. Spirituality, we can keep on growing till our very last day, because the kinds of things that comprise the spirit, there is no limit. We can always improve ourselves. And that paradoxically, I point out, that spiritual improvement can actually reveal new character defects, because a tiny spot on a coarse garment won't be noticeable. The same tiny spot on a fine silk garment would be very conspicuous. The more we become better, the more sensitive we become to realizing that there are little defects that might not have been defects if we are at a lesser level of spirituality, but they're defects today.
Wow, that's a beautiful analogy. I really like that one.
And then I point out something else. Don't be afraid to start off on spirituality, that it is a humongous kind of challenge. I point out the case of a woman who had one of the chairs in her living room was shabby, and it had to be replaced. So she got a new chair, and then she said, oh, but now the couch doesn't fit with that. So you had to replace the couch. But now, look, the rug doesn't fit with that. Replace the rug, right? And then the wallpaper, then the drapes, and then the lamps, and then the pictures. And it all ends up because a new chair. I say, you know, start working with one item, maybe with anger management. Learn how to control your rage. Once you develop one spiritual trait, what happens is some of the other traits that are non-spiritual become incompatible. They got to go too. And you work at it slowly, and eventually it turned out to be a wonderfully spiritual person. Now, remember, I didn't say that a person must be religious in order to do this, right? Because we haven't talked about religion. We're talking about character traits that are present in every person.
These character traits are so important, though, because they tie into the malaise that people in modern-day society walk around with, and they don't really know why they have this marginal melancholy or lack of energy, however it's presenting itself in a particular person. So
right.
It's critical,
right.
You know.
Right.
Very interesting. You know, I think Martha and I are probably, at least my head's all over the place with how it relates to certain women and certain women with problem marriages and who have been abused or hurt, and their feelings are very sensitive. But this is a framework, and within that you have to work it for your particular client or person.
Right.
Well, Dr. Tversky, may I ask, please? I think your system is fabulous. Could you, for the benefit of our listeners, talk about the types of happiness one might expect if she were to follow this program, the improvements in her life?
Yeah, repeat that, please. I didn't get you.
Oh, sure. What I'm wondering is, if we take your model, how might a woman who follows your model find more happiness in her life? How would that translate into the quality of her everyday living?
Okay. One of the things that I thought about happiness is that happiness is only present to the degree that a person can fulfill oneself. But the example I use is, if you have a four-cylinder motor, all right, it's not going to produce 300 horsepower, but it'll get you and it'll give you a smooth ride. If you have an eight-cylinder motor that produces 300 horsepower, but two cylinders are not working, they're going to get a very shaky ride, or a lot of discomfort, because the eight-cylinder motor has to operate on eight cylinders to work smoothly. I think that if we neglect these spiritual things within us, right? And operate only according to whatever else it is with very little spirituality, we're going to be unhappy. And I think that working toward spirituality fulfills us more and more as human beings. And the more we're fulfilled as human beings, the happier we are and the less unhappier we are.
So it really promotes a general sense of well-being as opposed to discontent.
Right. Now, you see, one of the things that in our profession, in psychiatry and psychology, is it's axiomatic, don't get involved with the patient's religion. Well, I understand that. But because of that, nobody gets involved with the client's spirituality as well, and that's a mistake. Okay? So being that I separate spirituality from religion, I say to psychologists, one of the things that you have to investigate is your patient, client, fulfilling herself or himself in every way possible as a human being. Because to the point that they are not fulfilling themselves, they're going to be discontented and you're going to give them antidepressants or whatever.
Right.
I agree with this 100%, and I think my work over the last 15 years has been very much in this direction. And I don't know, I think you know, Dr. Twersky, that I quoted you in my first book, The Enchanted Self of Positive Therapy, because I was so moved. This is back 12 years or so ago when I was writing the rough draft. I was so moved by writings that you had done around people and their psychiatrists and their people helping them, seeing them in a positive light rather than a negative light, so as to help them reach their potential.
Right. There's so many things that people can do to enhance their spirituality. I had a patient, alcoholic woman, who recovered, and then one day she came back and she said, "Oh, it's so wonderful. My child is old enough to be in school full-time. I can take a full-time job now, and maybe I'll even have enough money to get my car fixed." I said, "What's wrong with your car?" She said, "It doesn't have a reverse gear." I said, "Well, how do you drive it?" She says, "Well, you got to think ahead and see where you're going to park." She said, "But you know, some people don't have a car at all." Well, this woman called me 2 years later that unfortunately she had been diagnosed with breast cancer. Some time went by and she came back and she had gone through treatment for breast cancer. She had gone through chemotherapy. Her hair had grown back beautifully, thicker than ever before. Now here's the punchline. What she did when she was under chemotherapy and was totally bald, she took pictures of herself. She now, with her beautiful head of hair, goes to the oncologist's office, shows the patients, "Look, your hair is going to fall out, but here's what I look like, and look at me now."
Wow, tremendous.
That is a spiritual person.
And it's an act of kindness toward other people, which is what spirituality really is. Supposed to direct you to the way you're supposed to be as a great person, to
right.
be kind.
Right. And I think in your book, you do point out how becoming a more spiritual person will lead to so many more good deeds.
Right.
We didn't discuss that, but I agree. Well, I want to thank you very much. Do you want to mention anything further about this book?
Well, it's just that it's not out yet. It's still in the publishing stage. It's going to be out probably by the end of August. The title is Happiness and the Human Spirit.
Very good. That's wonderful.
Well, I wish you well, Dr. Twersky.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks so much. And everybody, come back next week for Happiness for Women Only. And we're going to say goodbye for now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for listening to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio. If you enjoyed today's program and you want to listen to it all over again, please go over to http://internetvoicesradio.com, and it should be posted within the hour. The next program coming up at 3:30 is Monica Coleman, and let's talk waterways. So don't go away and don't stray, because there's more for you to listen today. PIVTR, whether providing you with the advice of experts or giving a voice to the average person who would not otherwise be heard. PIVTR emphasizes quality and enriching programs for our listeners' enjoyment. Thank you all very much, and have a great day.